On this episode of Newey Tech People, I sit down and chat with Anthony Molyneux, CIO of the University of Newcastle. We speak about his career overseas, working in the UK, New York and Zurich, before transitioning into health and now higher education. We discuss Anthony's current role at the university, what the university are doing to drive innovation, and also Anthony's thoughts on the future of higher education. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode 7 of Newey Tech People. Today we have Anthony Molyneux, CIO of the University of Newcastle. Welcome, Anthony.
Thank you very much. Well done on the name.
Yes, it's good to get it off on a good start. Mate, you're a big fish for the Newcastle tech scene, so this will be really interesting. I think our listeners will find it, you know, really interesting to hear your perspectives on things, with the university both being a really big employer in the region and you being relatively new to the role. So I think it'd be interesting to hear your opinions on things.
Thank you. Big fish. That's a nice compliment. I'll take that. Thank you very much.
Nice, mate. Mate, I think it'd be really interesting for people just to get an understanding of who you are, where you've come from, and then we can dig a little bit into your role. But yeah, what's your quick story?
So I'm a Sydney lad. Don't hold it against me. Born and bred in Sydney. Spent most of my time, being educated obviously in Sydney, and then late 90s, I moved to the UK, did the normal, what was going to be the normal two-year travel stint, ended up staying and working in UK, Zurich and New York for 9 years, predominantly in investment banking, and then moved back with a wife in tow in 2005 to choosing the life of a work-life balance. Wanted to start a family, so decided that wasn't going to happen in the UK. So brought that back to Sydney, moved back to Sydney and started in financial services, so out of investment banking into financial services. Then really got bored with financial services and decided to, extend my horizons and move into consulting, because I thought consulting could provide me with an avenue to differentiate across different sectors. My two main sectors of focus were health and higher education. I managed to get a consulting gig at University of Newcastle, supporting the then CIO at the time. And since then, I've been fortunate enough to be offered the CIO role in October 2016.
Very nice. So it's a couple of years in now.
Yeah, just about.
Yeah, nice. It's a big role. How are you finding the role? What's a general remit for the CIO of the University of Newcastle?
Oh, look, the remit, I suppose it depends. There are two different things, what's said on the brochure and how I take it, I suppose. I look at it in two things. One, my job is obviously to keep the IT operations running for the organisation. That's a given. So the lights need to be kept on from an IT perspective. But I believe my mandate, and certainly from discussions that I've had with my seniors, my mandate is to, generate disruption and also respond to disruption. Now, there's a lot of changes in the higher education sector. Digital plays a massive role in that context. So I believe my role is to actually be mindful of that and help drive that force and imperative for the organisation now and into the future.
Yeah, it's extremely refreshing to hear. I think a lot of people wouldn't have an idea of what goes on inside the University of Newcastle, and a lot of people have a perception of the higher education industry is going to change, and what are people doing to see that and to be knowledgeable of what's going to happen and try to disrupt it, like you said.
Yeah, look, I think IT's traditionally in higher education sector have been a bit back office minded, more of a cost center focus. I think as a lot of other industries outside of higher education have demonstrated that they need to be sitting in the value chain or as part of the value chain, as an enabler of change and as an enabler of value to an organisation. So I think I'm certainly wanting to push this IT organisation or this IT unit within the university to be customer-centric, student-focused, researcher-focused, to deliver change, to deliver that experience through digital technologies. And I think there is so much that we can offer in terms of capabilities, not just withstanding what's available in the market, but what we have access to from our students that are learning here at the university. So being able to tap into that, that resource pool that we have readily available to us, sitting and working directly within arm's reach.
Yeah.
So it's a massive opportunity and something that I think is a little bit underutilized, but I have plans to utilize it much more effectively going forward.
It's a Big challenge.
It's a huge challenge, yeah. I'm not here for a short term, so it's going to take a long time to change. But we're definitely on the path. So, you know, we have what we call an omnimodal approach to things, and that is looking at everything from the way in which we do things, so delivery methodologies to technologies to governance to funding models, taking a fit-for-purpose approach. That's what omnimodal really means for us. So whatever fits is what we apply. So, you know, some things require some automation to generate efficiencies in order to free up capacity and capability to operate in the innovation side. Things like immersive learning using AR and VR that we've demonstrated in the School of Nursing and Midwifery quite recently.
Yeah, mate. When I've started to learn a little bit about some of the projects that have gone on within the university through a couple of different projects and people that I've known, I don't think people have knowledge of the sort of technology that you actually have access to and are completing projects with.
Well, it's good, actually. It's really exciting. And that's part of the reason why I targeted, I suppose, the health and higher education sectors, because of the opportunity that they have to innovate and to explore new technologies. You know, it's quite very, very different to banking, I suppose, in that context. So, you know, we're looking at a whole raft of different technologies. As I said, we've done a few projects in the AR and VR space for, you know, specific schools within the university, and looking to expand that to get a footprint in that space and be a differentiator in that market. We're investigating into machine learning and artificial intelligence to help support from an efficiency perspective, but also to deliver student experience for their life whilst on campus or engaged with the university. And we're also investing at the moment into blockchain technology to see how that can be utilised to help, provide the student with more control of their credential or more control of their learning outcomes, whether that be, you know, at the University of Newcastle or in the future when they're in the workforce.
Now, there's about four or five different angles I want to go down there that you just tapped in. Let's go to the blockchain, just the last part you mentioned there, and they mentioned the fact that it'll be... The objective long-term is to provide the user, the person being educated with, I guess, more control of how they go about that. Education's obviously going to change. So blockchain in particular, how do you think that may influence it?
Well, traditionally, you know, the higher education organisations have delivered, you know, degrees and, or postgraduate degrees. And the notion of a credential is getting smaller, right? So it's more stackable. They're breaking up a degree into, obviously units, which is what makes up a degree, and then chunking it down. So being able to actually complete or do a course and get a credential for that component of an overall course or program is something that might be valuable to a student as opposed to actually having to complete an entire degree. Now, a student may decide to do a particular course at the University of Newcastle, and they may be, then wish to take that to their workplace and apply that in the workplace. Then might actually do a course in the workplace and then attach the two together to demonstrate a capability that then could be used in the marketplace to for another job that they may go to. So it's stacking credentials that you achieve, regulated credentials that you achieve at the university with non-regulated credentials you can attain elsewhere outside of university, as well as professional learning, as well as capabilities you could get from a simple training course. So it's actually letting the student or the constituent or the consumer, if you will, depends how you want to classify them, be the owner of that destiny, of their learning outcomes, and what they feel is applicable for their career path. And therefore, the flip side of that is obviously employers can then start to narrow in on capabilities that they're searching for in their particular employee searches. And as a result of that, flipping the blockchain to be discoverable in that context, credentials being discoverable by employers so that they can actually target in on particular capability sets.
Yeah,
hope that makes sense.
It does. I think it's on point as well. I think from a couple of different angles there. I think the consumer wants more flexibility these days. People tend to have shorter attention spans these days, and locking into a 3-year, 4-year degree, probably not as applicable this day and age as it might have been in the past. But also, I think as you mentioned, there's
there's different parts that could add to somebody's career. So you might not have everything from a business focus. You might pick some of the, I guess, modules from a business degree and then complement that with some modules from another part, which will add then to you as a potential employee being more employable.
Be more employable, be more rounded, being an asset to not only to an employer or if you're an entrepreneur to your own business, but also to the community, I think. So, you know, not often the soft skills are readily credentialed, yet they're of a significant importance to an organisation, significant importance to the culture of an individual and what that brings to an organisation. And those things, you know, I can see as being something that you'd want to be able to provide a lens or a look through into, and that you know, that person has attended that training course or has done that professional learning.
I agree, and it makes the university an asset to employers as well by having access to those smaller modules that they can, you know, they can have their employees go through a certain module instead of having to sign up for an entire degree or something like that.
Yeah, that's right. And look, it's the interesting thing with the blockchain initiative, I suppose, is whilst we're, you know, working with, you know, within the university and engaging external parties to help create the chain, because it obviously requires more than just one institution to get involved, I think the opportunity there is substantial. I mean, not just in order to supply the student with a level of autonomy around their learning outcomes, but also to almost create a market within its own right.
I think it'd be extremely refreshing for a lot of people to actually hear somebody like yourself help driving a project that might be blockchain related or other you know, VR, AR projects, but just to hear that the university is actually thinking about these things and trying to disrupt themselves, so to speak.
Yeah, well, look, the university, I mean, we're a regional campus and being a regional campus and not part of a large metropolitan city, we have the opportunity to be a little bit more flexible, believe it or not. So, you know, we need to leverage off of those advantages in terms of being able to be flexible and being able to be a little bit innovative, utilizing the space we have available to us, really operate as a living lab and or a microcosm of a city, and testing it and using the university to be tested that way to support the regional communities and also then to be translated into a broader metropolitan city.
I completely agree. Mate, on the technology you made mention before of an innovation team, I think 99% of organisations don't have innovation teams or dedicated innovation teams. They're looking at, you know, different variations of ways to innovate from within. I think the fact that you actually made mention the university has that internally here is a massive advantage. You want to give a quick overview to the people that might not know about that, some of the projects that they might be working on?
Yeah, so look, the innovation team's a small team and it's purposefully a small team. And it's been very fruitful. I mean, they've done a lot of projects in a short period of time. Basically, the projects that I mentioned previously, so augmented reality, virtual reality, to demonstrate how effective immersive technology can be in the learning space, particularly for both those that require a safe environment to learn in, and simulation environments are often very expensive, like physical simulation environments, and or to deliver a level of equity. So sometimes, you know, students have to work in order to pay to go to university and can't come to all the tutorials or to the lab work that they have at the university. To give them a virtual reality kit and access to that software provides a level of equity for those students that aren't able to attend all the courses or all the labs in the university. So that's one aspect. They've also spent some time in the artificial intelligence space, you know, developing what we see as, you know, almost like a student assistant, which is not uncommon in the university space. And they've started to work in the blockchain. They're a very small team. There's five or six of them in the team. Yeah. But it's designed to be a collaborative unit. So whilst there's five or six in the team, their specialties are in user experience, human-centered design, design thinking, as well as in you know, a broad range of technology stacks.
Yeah.
And then engaging and collaborating with people from the school to help define the problem and or opportunity, and then with external parties to help provide augmented resources to drive the outcomes. Their projects last anywhere between 12 and 16 weeks from zero to hero, from concept to delivery. And, you know, they've, you know, in the space of 18 months gotten through 14 projects. So they're very effective in that space. However, I think we need to turn the dial up in that space and make innovation a bias, yeah, as opposed to a team on its own right. So I have a bias to innovation, I have a bias to action. So we're actually looking to bring innovation into all aspects of our business lines, if you will, and try and drive innovation throughout all the teams, not just in you know, one or two areas.
Yeah, I think those short-term projects, I think it's definitely the way. There's not too many people that actually look at it, genuinely look at it, as in we've got a 14-week timeline, mm-hmm, to go from zero to hero, as you said.
Yeah,
I think it's phenomenal that you're actually doing that and delivering, what, 14 projects in a two-year period?
Yeah, so we time box, we cost box. Yep. That's generally our approach. And look, the idea in a lot of ways is to test the outcome. I mean, the reality is technology projects can be extremely expensive. Yep. So, you know, you need to walk before you run in a lot of aspects. And we, in some instances, use it to test the theory. But in a lot of instances, we use it to actually deliver the outcome. And it's been quite fruitful. We just need to do more of it. And it needs to become the status quo as opposed to the exception.
Yeah, I think whilst you're there and you can still see there are challenges ahead, mm, you are definitely a long way ahead of most people. If there was a company, let's say they're listening to this and they're thinking about innovation, thinking about how do we go from zero? We don't have an innovation team. We don't have an innovation manager. We don't have anyone employed in an innovation factor. Mm. What would you, if you had to give some advice on how to start, mm, how would you do that if you were to walk into a new organization and help drive innovation?
Well, I mean, I think from my perspective, there's two lenses. There's what I see is innovation and transformation. And innovation is almost changes around the edges, and transformation is fundamental, you know, redesign and fundamental change. So from my perspective, irrespective of innovation or transformation, you need to go to your customer, right? You need to understand your customer. You need to understand their problems and opportunities. So I would start with typically a human-centered design approach. Do some ideation, do some design thinking. Even if you don't have that capability within your organization, buy that capability, whether that through an agency and or all through consulting and or all through, you know, normal recruitment processes. But you need to understand, you know, your current state and then your customer need, and determine what the gap is, because it's no point in innovating for innovating's sake.
Yeah.
It actually has to be there to solve a problem,
yeah,
right? Or deliver on an opportunity. So you need to identify what they are first before you start to invest.
Yeah, it's a good train of thought, because I think on the flip side, some people would go, oh, we need an innovation team. We hire that innovation, yeah, manager without actually knowing those problems you're going to solve.
Mm.
So that's sort of the reverse way about going about it.
Yeah, I think look, innovation managers, hiring an innovation manager is also a good place to start, because often they do come with that mindset of, you know, customer or human-centered design approach, yeah, in terms of certainly the good ones, in terms of how to innovate or where to innovate.
That's really interesting. I love that sort of thing. I think there's a lot of organisations that could take a lot of learnings from that, and sort of your journey and the university's journey through driving innovation through an innovation team to start with, and then, mm-hmm, looking to sort of expand that to make that genuinely felt throughout the organisation. You can't do that on day one. So, you do implement it through a smaller team,
yep,
prove its successes before sort of branching out. So I think there's a lot of learnings that could be taken from that.
It's a journey at the end of the day. So innovation team has already delivered many dividends and many benefits to the organisation, not just in terms of the projects that they've delivered, but also improving the capability.
Yep.
As I said, we were mainly considered a back office function. Our strategy is to become a strategic and trusted advisor and partner of the organisation. The innovation team has helped us traverse that journey, and we've still got a long way to go, but they've certainly demonstrated that we have capability in that space. But we've still got a long way to go, right? So, you know, we don't do these things lightly, and we don't do these things on our own. We need to bring the student and the researcher closer to our core operating model, yeah, as well as you know, the partners and business that we have, you know, in and around the faculties, because, you know, they are at the coalface. They, you know, see opportunities and problems on a day-to-day basis. So the closer we get to them, the more effective and value we can deliver.
I agree. You're obviously a smart guy and have a massive interest from a technology perspective. What got you into technology to begin with?
Originally, I almost fell into technology. I mean, I started arts in uni year one, and then because I didn't know what I wanted to study predominantly, and then moved to actuarial studies at Macquarie University. Got a undergraduate program offer from an insurance company and worked there for a little bit, working just in customer service, not knowing really where I wanted to go. I moved from customer service and advisor services into business analysis, and then I suppose, you know, I'm a son of a builder, and you know, my brothers are, you know, one's a scientist and one's a mechanic and one's a physio, so they're all pretty much hands-on. So I ended up finding myself being virtually hands-on and trying to understand how the system was working, or how the system was delivering outcomes that I was busy business analyzing. And so that's how I suppose I got into technology, by virtue of curiosity more than anything else. So I went from a business analyst to a systems analyst to even into testing, and then through the project management, and then into IT from that route.
Yeah, nice. You made mention of education.
Mm-hmm.
Education. You're obviously in the education space, so
yep.
You probably have multiple views and multiple lenses to look at this from. But
yep.
Hey, what's your from a technology perspective in general?
Yeah.
You're obviously hire technology professionals as well. What's your opinion on a technology degree as it currently stands in the marketplace?
Oh, look, I think times are changing, right? So, it's not one size fits all, and it should never be one size fits all. And traditionally, you know, higher education has delivered, you know, a monolith education set, and we are now much more of a consumptive or appified, if you will, as I like to call it, economy. Yeah. So we like to break things down. So I think... You know, if you look at it from the perspective of how people use their mobile phones, if they download an app and they don't like it, they just download the next one. So I look at anything the same way, whether it be, buying a consumer product, or whether it be staying in a hotel, or whether it be getting a taxi ride. If I don't like it, I'll just switch. So education actually needs to be, in my mind, the same way. So... it's going to become more competitive. So what I would say is, you know, the degrees today, they serve a purpose, they deliver an outcome. However, I feel like I was saying in reference to blockchain, they need to be chunked up a little bit more. There needs to be a little bit more flexibility and nuances to individuals. So I think we're in an interesting time of change where technology degrees in particular will become part of a lot of degrees, because the separation of technology and, you know, other functions is becoming a lot more grey.
Yeah.
Right? So if you think of the notion of cybersecurity, for example, is it unreasonable to think that everyone should do cybersecurity 101? Everyone should be made aware of the risks of cybersecurity. Maybe that's something that's worth considering. So in which case, technology degrees or technology courses actually become part of, you know, every person's, you know, natural learning journey.
Yeah.
Cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, bots, these things. So I actually think that, I see technology as an enabler.
Yeah.
And so maybe technology degrees should be enabling other outcomes, not just degrees in their own right. Obviously, we still need developers and we still need technology specialists.
Yeah.
But again, I think they'll be a concatenation of a lot of learning, as opposed to single learning focuses in one area, in one or two areas.
Yeah, that's the first time I've actually heard that. I find it really, really pertinent. I think there's not too many jobs out there that aren't affected by technology, and it would make sense to actually take some parts of a traditional technology degree and implement that into other degrees, because the roles are going to be affected by technology. And as you made mention, like VR and AR in the future, mm-hmm. where all bots or
mm-hmm.
things like that are going to affect a vast majority of roles in the future.
Yeah.
And having some significant knowledge of that space would be advantageous.
Yeah, look, it certainly suits my purposes coming from a technology background.
Yeah.
But I think it would be ignorant in a way not to acknowledge the fact that technology is going to have a major impact on a lot of people's lives, certainly now already and into the future. Everyone from lawyers to your shop owners to your mechanics to in medicine, there's going to be impacts. And so to get on the front foot, to get in front of that, whilst there's always going to be a need for technology degrees, I think technology degrees should be chunked up as well so that you can provide a level of transparency or and or learning to those that aren't doing technology specific degrees.
Completely agree. Outside of university as a whole, there's obviously a rise in other educational avenues. Any opinions on those, on where they sit in a career life cycle?
Oh, look, I think, again, it's up to the individual. Yeah. It's got to be what suits the individual, what their style, what their how they like to be engaged with it, with educational, with learning outcomes. Even to the extent of professional development, you know, that might suit people in order to have it directly related to their employment, i.e. directly related to context, may be appropriate. So I think it's, again, we're much more of a consumptive economy, so it really depends on the individual as to the relevance. But I think they all have a place to play in the education as a whole.
Yeah, I completely agree again. Mate, you're obviously running a big role now. Mm-hmm. You've been some big roles in the past.
Mm-hmm.
This role in particular, I imagine, extremely busy. What do you do on a daily basis to help you get by? So let's look at it from a productivity standpoint. Is there any software in particular or any productivity tools that you use to get through your day and succeed?
Well, since I've been here, and given that we are a bit of a Microsoft shop, I have to say, that's not a plug, but given I've been here, I do use their productivity tools. So I do use OneNote quite a lot on the mobile phone, on the laptop when I go home. I use that as my main productivity tool and Teams for that matter, mainly because it's, I think it's easy for me to use what everyone else is using in the workplace as a general tool because it removes the duplication, I suppose.
Yeah.
And so that's probably where I spend most of my time in OneNote.
I think you're right. If the removal of duplication just become more efficient, saves a lot of time.
Well, it's easy. I can share my OneNotes with other people. I have an ideas section in OneNote that I fill in. I have a to-do list in OneNote. So it becomes easy, you know.
Easy's good, right?
Easy's good.
Yep. Mate, if you had to provide some advice to others, you've obviously, you've taken maybe not a different path, but you've gone through FS, like traditional maybe technology roles in FS into consulting, now into a CIO from a higher educational perspective, not a traditional career route potentially. If you had to provide advice to other people, let's say starting out their technology degree that have aspirations to be a tech leader, any advice you could give to people?
It's a good question. I think the advice I say, and I've been quoted saying this in the past, I suppose, don't read it, do it. So my view is you've got to get your hands dirty a little bit. You've got to get in there. You've got to understand that applies to whether or not you're dealing with your customer. Yep. You've got to get in. You've got to speak to them. You can't just email them. A survey is not going to work, for example. Or whether that is trying out a new technology, you've got to have a go yourself. Or whether or not that is doing a project, try and project manage yourself. I think having an entrepreneurial mindset is probably where I would start. And they are typically those people that don't read it, they do it.
Yeah.
I think the quote that I was picked up in saying is, I was asked, what's the latest book you've read? Or what do you prefer to read? And I said, I prefer to play as opposed to read.
Yeah.
And that is, I'd rather get amongst it than actually read about it.
Yeah.
And so I think taking an entrepreneurial mindset, irrespective to whatever it is where I think the leaders in particularly in the technology space could potentially start, because technology is not to be something that sits in the back office. It needs to be front of mind because it is an enabler and it can be a differentiator.
Yeah, I agree. And by entrepreneurial mindset, right? I mean, what you're saying there is like actually test and play.
Test and play, that's right.
Get your hands dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it's if we say entrepreneurial mindset to somebody and somebody's like, oh, how do I get one of them? What book do I have to read to become an entrepreneur? No. It's like, okay.
Test and play. Act, learn. Yeah. You know? So do something. Understand the impacts of whatever it is that you've done. Understand where you went wrong, what you did well. Go back and do it again.
Yeah. Notwithstanding the, you know, get your hands dirty, get in there. From a, you know, from a book or a podcast perspective, is there anything that you can remember that was like, boom, that was a game changer for me, or that was something somebody could really benefit from?
So, I mean, I've just subscribed to a few podcasts. I mean, I used to listen to a podcast a lot more when I was commuting from Sydney to Newcastle, I suppose, in that trip up the M1. But self-awareness training was, and books on self-awareness were probably the number one thing that helped me understand how I can navigate a situation, how I can negotiate, how I can influence, how I can read, and then how I can achieve outcomes. Yeah. So self-awareness is it's one thing to be aware of your impact on others, but it's another thing. Self-awareness can actually help you understand someone else's responses to your impact and therefore enable you to adjust your style on the fly in order to accommodate a certain situation. So I think self-awareness was a key one for me. In terms of the podcasts, I have a bit of a diverse set of podcasts. Some are investments. I like to keep an eye out for like trading podcasts, only because they generally fly on the edge, and it's always good to be on the edge. Innovation podcasts, tech. I've got a few tech podcasts and leadership podcasts. Nice. They're probably the four categories I listen to.
Yeah, cool. And I think what you mentioned of there, leadership, and also from a book's perspective, self-awareness.
Yeah,
that's a key differentiator for tech professionals in particular. Leaders in general, but tech professionals in particular, the guys that do go up the chain, that is a differentiator. There's people that actually can have that conversation and understand business and be able to communicate with other people.
Yeah.
The benefits for technology, right? I think everyone understands that there are benefits that can be had from technology, or as you put it, like enabling.
Yeah.
But being able to communicate that and understand where other people fit in that scenario.
Yeah, I mean, technologists typically have their own diction, or they have their own vocabulary.
Yep.
You need to be able to communicate on multiple different levels, and being aware of that is important.
Great. You mentioned driving up from Sydney to Newcastle. You're living up here now.
I do live up here now. So I've been up here for 18-19 months.
And the job brought you to Newcastle, right?
Not
you're in Newcastle and then looking for the job.
No, the job brought me to Newcastle. So I was originally, whilst I was consulting here, I was commuting. But ever since I took the role as CIO, I moved the family up lock, stock and barrel.
Cool. Now, what's your, it's not initial thoughts because you've been here for a while now, but what's your thoughts on Newcastle from a tech perspective?
Oh, look, I think even in the short period that I've been here, I've noticed that it's there's a bit of a groundswell, and it's grown from when I first got here already, and I think that's partly to do with the fact of, one, I suppose immersing myself a little bit in the community, but two, you know, what's happening at the council level. Newcastle City Council is driving an innovation agenda as well, and I think that's important for the community. I think because it's a regional community, because it's quite parochial, I think there's a huge opportunity to drive a lot of innovation, a lot of change, and a lot of opportunities from within the Newcastle community through technology. There's a lot of smart thinkers here. There is so much going on from a technology space. It was actually quite surprising. I didn't expect it. There's probably a bit more cohesion that needs to occur in terms of, you know, getting more of a volume of people together on particular topics or particular problems or opportunities. But I think that will come through time. And I think that that's starting to happen with some of the get-togethers that are starting to take place in the region.
Yeah, mate, I completely agree. And it was one of the reasons I, you know, set out with this podcast was to shine light on the things that are happening. As you may mention, it's surprising to know what's going on around Newcastle. I think most people don't have an idea. And most people wouldn't have an idea that, hey, the leader of the university is actually thinking about blockchain technology and how that's potentially going to disrupt the education industry, and the fact there's an innovation team sitting within the university playing with the latest and greatest technologies. I think it's really awesome to hear that and for people to become aware of that.
Yeah, so I think you're absolutely right, and I think that's why this podcast is such a good idea.
Yeah.
Because it starts to get the message out a little bit, and there needs to be more of it.
Yeah, cool.
So congratulations to you.
Yeah, cheers, mate. You did make mention, so I guess my next sort of line of thought was how do we improve this, right? From Newcastle, you've worked in big cities both in Australia and over in London.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to provide some, I guess, your advice or what you'd like to see happen, you made mention of, I guess, more collaborative approach. Anything else outside of that that you'd like to see to help Newcastle be put on the map from a tech perspective?
I think as I said earlier, I think we need to look at what the region has available to it in terms of its benefits and leverage those. So Newcastle has, space, and because it has space, it has opportunity to be invested in, right? From a tech perspective, I would like to see tech companies come up here, and I would like to see them encouraged to come up here or down here. It depends where you are coming from, I suppose. So from my perspective, I think one of the next big things to occur in Newcastle would be, a reasonably large tech co investing in the region by actually putting a base within the region. And that should then drive some consolidation of not only capability, but also capacity, so numbers of resources. And then that should also then enable some focus in certain areas of problem solving and or opportunity realization.
Completely agree. I think that, for me, that would be the target, right? For me, it would be drag a large scale technology based company to the region.
Yep.
And I think there's, we're doing well from Newcastle's perspective, growing smaller technology companies, and maybe one of those that grows up, makes it big, and remains local.
Yeah.
But it would also be nice to see a big company come to town.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to be honest, it doesn't really matter how it happens, if it's organic growth or if it's brought into the region. I just think that for me would be a significant catalyst to drive even more tech innovation into the region, and actually, even potentially turn this region into a tech hub for not only the state but for Australia.
Yeah, I agree. I think we might have a challenge from Sydney though with the new Silicon Valley being put in.
There's enough space in Sydney, it'll be fine.
Yeah, it's all good. Mate, you mentioned there, last question around that Newcastle market. Obviously, we do face challenges.
Yeah.
Mate, the biggest challenge that you've found in Newcastle so far?
Oh, look, there are challenges in terms of getting the right resources, particularly on the bleeding edge, because they are attracted into bigger markets like Sydney, Melbourne, or in fact overseas. So I think that is one of our biggest challenges. I hire predominantly on culture as opposed to capability. So, in a way, it's okay because we can always train the capability side of things. But I suppose keeping the good talent local is probably one of our biggest challenges. And because at the end of the day, it's important that we grow the region and we grow the community in that context, because we are a regional university. So hence the reason why I said earlier we're trying to grab the students before they leave, leave becoming a student, so that they understand the opportunities of working in a regional environment. People can't and shouldn't underestimate the opportunities of work-life balance, which is what this region provides or can provide, and what the university can provide. So there's significant benefits with that, things that you don't get when you move to Sydney, London, New York or Zurich.
And also opportunities that in a smaller organisation,
a lot more flexibility.
And opportunity for growth, right?
You potentially have
an opportunity to wear multiple hats earlier on. And I realise there's a lot of benefits in specialising, but the opportunity to wear multiple hats and to grow different skills and move up that chain a lot quicker, you may get to that in Newcastle as opposed to,
That's a good point. Yeah, you can choose your own adventure, you can actually create as opposed to being directed.
Yeah.
That's very true in from a Newcastle perspective.
Probably speaks to that entrepreneurial mindset.
Right? That's right, yeah.
I agree. Mate, anything else that you'd like to share with the podcast community?
Not I can think of. Only that. Thanks for your time, and thanks for the opportunity to have a chat. I really appreciate it. I think this is a great thing that you're doing, and I'm looking forward to getting out and amongst it more in the tech space in Newcastle.
Very nice. And if last thing, if people want to understand what's going on, maybe within the innovation team or what's happening at Newcastle University from a grade perspective, or you personally, is there anywhere that they should be following? Any website they should be
There isn't a specific website apart from the university websites, but I encourage most of my team to get out there and speak locally. They are often at the innovation hubs within the city, talking to, you know, whenever there's innovation days and or entrepreneurial days or startup days. So I encourage my team to do that. I readily go and speak at events as well, and my team. So they're actually free to contact the office, and we're happy to share whatever we can share, because, you know, we think that the more people that get together and drive towards an outcome, the faster we'll get to that outcome and the better it will be for everyone involved.
That's great. I think it's great for the community as well.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for your time, James. Appreciate it. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If this was your first episode of New Tech People, feel free to check out our back catalogue with interviews with some of Newcastle's leading tech professionals. If you'd like to be interviewed on the podcast, or you know of somebody that would, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. You can find all the details on my website, jamesmacdonald.me. Thanks again for listening.